The book of Judges, chapter 13, verse 2. And there was a certain man of Zorah, of the family of the Danites, whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren, and bare not. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto the woman, and said unto her, Behold, now thou art barren, and bearest not, but thou shalt conceive, and bear a son. Now therefore beware, I pray thee, and drink not wine, nor strong drink, and eat not any unclean thing. For lo, thou shalt conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come on his head. For the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. Verse 24, And the woman bare a son, and called his name Samson. And the child grew, and the Lord blessed him. And the Spirit of the Lord began to move him at times, in the camp of Dan, between Zorah and Eshtaol. Verse 1 of the next chapter, chapter 14, And Samson went down to Timnath, and saw a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. Now look at verse 4, But his father and his mother knew not that it was of the Lord, that he sought an occasion against the Philistines, for that time the Philistines had dominion over Israel. Then went Samson down, and his father and his mother, to Timnah. Verse 7, And he went down and talked with the woman. Now toward the end of the chapter, verse 20, But Samson's wife was given to his companion, whom he had used as his friend. And then verse 6 of chapter 15, Then the Philistines said, Who have done this? And they answered, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite. Because he had taken his wife and given her to his companion. And the Philistines came up and burnt her and her father with fire. Now, look at verse 9. Then the Philistines went up and pitched in Judah and spread themselves in Lehi. And the men of Judah said, Why are you come up against us? And they answered, To bind Samson are we come up, to do to him as he had done to us. Then 3,000 men of Judah went to the top of the rock, Edom, and said to Samson, Knowest thou not that the Philistines are rulers over us? What is this that thou hast done unto us? And he said unto them, As they did unto me, so have I done unto them. And they said unto him, We are come down to bind thee. Then you notice at verse 15, when he was loosed of his hands in verse 15, And he found a new jawbone of an ass, and put forth his hand and took it, and slew 1,000 men therewith. And verse 20, And he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. Then you have him going down to Gaza in chapter 16, and verse 4, And it came to pass afterward that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. Then she's promised 1,100 pieces of silver if she finds out his secret. Now verse 15, And she said unto him, How canst thou say, I love thee, when thine heart is not with me? Thou hast mocked me these 3 times, and hast not told me wherein thy great strength lieth. And it came to pass, when she pressed him daily with her words, and urged him, so that his soul was vexed unto death, that he told her all his heart, and said unto her, There hath not come a razor upon mine head, for I have been a Nazarite unto God from my mother's womb. Now look at verse 20. And she said, The Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And he awoke out of his sleep and said, I will go out as at other times before and shake myself. And he wist not that the Lord had departed from him. But the Philistines took him and put out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza and bound him with fetters of brass, and he did grind in the prison house. Howbeit the hair of his head began to grow again after he was shaven. Then look at verse 30. And Samson said, Let me die with the Philistines. And he bowed himself with all his might. And the house fell upon the lords and upon all the people that were therein. So the dead which he slew at his death were more than they which he slew in his might. Then his brethren and all the house of his father came down and took him and brought him up and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol in the burying place of Manoah, his father, and he judged Israel 20 years. And that will do for our reading. We have come to the last character that we will be considering in these meetings of the judges in this precious book of our Bible. And I must confess that as we look at him, he must be one of the strangest men that the world has ever seen. I know the children can be thrilled at times as they hear of his might and strength. And at times we look at him and we can really wonder that a man, I judge just to be an ordinary man to look at, I don't think by any means he was a great giant in size, just an ordinary man to look at, I assume, and an ordinary man like herself, yet he had strength. Strength that far exceeded any that we can think of in the scriptures or even since the Bible was written. Now the subject matter of Samson has a number of lessons to teach our souls. There's something to me very sad about the story. And I cannot feel the grief, but cannot help but feel the grief of it as I read it through. I can see here a man with great ability and great strength. And yet I can see weaknesses in him that are certainly very grieving and annoying. It lets me know that because a man is gifted in a spiritual sense, it no way exempts him from exhibiting failure and exhibiting his weaknesses in a way that would almost amaze you. Now, he was not like any of the other judges, as far as I can remember. He was set apart for the deliverance of Israel before he was born. I judge that in the book of Judges we are gradually coming into views and pictures fitting us for the next major book in our Bible, the book of Kings, or the first book of Samuel, where we have David coming into view. And as we all know that while there are great weaknesses in David's life, there are also beautiful pictures in that man's life of the coming Messiah of Israel. And I have no doubt whatever that in spite of Samson's dreadful failures, there are certain pictures in his life that would remind you of our blessed Lord and Master. The mother was first told concerning this young man that there would be a child born to her that would begin to deliver the Philistines out, or deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. Now this, of course, is the first time in the book that we really see the Philistines coming into prominence. Now we've had the mention from the very beginning. And we've had hints at them here and there through the book. But now they're beginning to be the major enemy of the nation of Israel. And they continue to be the major enemy of Israel right until the days of David. And it was given to David to complete what Samson began. That is, Samson would begin to deliver the nation, and David completed that by the slaying of the giants and by the absolute subduing of this Philistine host. Now you say, well, what does the Philistines remind us of? You see, they were resident in the land. Apparently, they're a race of people that came from Egypt. And they are settled in the land of Canaan, claiming possessions that were given by God to the Israelites. And they remind us very forcibly of those worldly-minded people who claim to be Christians but are not truly born again. Now, I hope you remember that. The Philistine in the Bible reminds us of worldly people who claim to be Christians but are not genuine children of God. Would try to possess what the child of God enjoys, but have no right to it. For you know the man that's not born again, and the woman that's not born again, has absolutely no claim in the sight of God to spiritual blessings. And the promised land, which we have looked upon as demonstrating spiritual blessings, is not their domain. It belongs to Israel, the true Israel, the children of God, the saved in this present age. Spiritual blessings are our portion. Some of you work with people. You mention to them the fact that you're a Christian. Oh, so am I. What do you think I am? I baptized believer? Well, sure, wasn't I baptized? I don't remember it. I was only an infant. But wasn't I baptized? I'm as much a Christian as you are. Have you been born again, you say to them? Well, I don't make any big claims. I don't go round the street shouting and yelling that I'm a Christian. I don't need to do that. And you know what you're speaking to them. They haven't an experience of the new birth. And you equally know that they are not on the way to heaven, no matter what claims they make. And you will find them the sworn enemy of the real child of God. They celebrate the man that's truly born again. Now, the sad part of the story, to my mind, relative to the nation, was this, that they were domineered by these people. They had risen up and risen up and risen up until they had taken control of the whole nation. And the nation not only knew that they were in control, but were quite content to give them control. And the men of Judah could tell Samson, look, say, sure you know that we're under the Philistines. And you know that they're in control. And why are you opposing them? Now, I still believe, I know it will sound wild to some of you folk in the city here, but I still believe that the devil's master stroke is to get an empty professor into control in God's assembly. Working in position in God's assembly can be a sore affliction on the people of God. Far enough, you know, for a man to get to the Lord's table that never has been saved. And you must all admit that you knew people broke bread and you know now they're not saved. Maybe you were at the reception. But it's far worse when a worldly man who's not born again gets pushed into position and carries on responsibility and makes life hard for the man that loves his God and loves his word. Now I judge, and I have scripture in my mind, I'm not going to read you with quotations, but I have scripture in my mind when I say that, that's the devil's masterpiece. That's his latest work. And there are many real children of God are prepared to allow that and bow to worldly control, even for the sake of peace and contentment. When we look at Samson, we can see that he was in a very special way marked out as a Nazarite. No one could even think of the man for a minute without realizing that there's a close association between his strength and his Nazariteship. Now, most of you will have read number 6 at some time or other, and you know that the Nazarite was the ordinary Israelite who had the opportunity of devoting his life, his all, to his God. He had the opportunity that was normally the portion of the priest to become a full-time servant of the Lord. And to indicate his devotion to the Lord, he was prepared to deny himself certain things in this life. Now, dear brother and dear sister, you will remember this as best you can, that if you are going to be devoted to the Lord, you will likely have to deny yourself things that other people can enjoy. Now you'll keep that in mind, won't you? That is, the true devoted believer is one who's prepared to say no when others say yes. Who rises above the standard of what's around them. Who takes not his guideline from the normal person in the nation, in the normal person among the Christians. He is one who is set apart for God. And he is, in a very special sense, devoted to God. And he puts his whole being on the altar for God. And that was God's purpose for the child Samson. His mother was to deny herself before he was born. And as you know, the women in Scripture always remind us of principles. That is, she, as it were, would illustrate the principle of separation unto God that would bring forth a son of like mind to herself. Hope, dear brother, that you not only believe separation yourself. I hope, dear brother, you not only believe in the great principle of separation taught from the beginning of the Bible to the end of it, but I hope that you are fruitful in producing others of a like mind. I wonder what sort of men are you producing? Now, don't think me cheeky, because we're at the end of the meeting, so I'm not going to be unreasonably bold. What sort of men are you producing? Are you instilling into the minds of people truth that you have practiced yourself and has a grip on your own soul, so that when you're teaching it, the very greatest opponent of it will have to admit, well, there's one thing brother believes it, and he has lived it, and whoever else doesn't believe it, he believes it. And if we are wise, we should believe it too. You see, Samson's mother had a hold of the great principles of Nazareteship even before the child was on her knee, or before she ever saw his face. Now we're told that the child grew. And no razor had come upon his head. He was to abstain from wine and from the husks and the different things associated, the kernel and the husk and all the different things associated with the vineyard. That is, he was to stay clear of that worldly excitement that the wine would remind us of. And then he was to have the evidence of his separation in his long hair. That is to say, he was to be publicly noticed, distinct from all the others. He had to bear the shame and reproach of long hair. For you know, every time you see a man with long hair, you know it's shameful and it's a reproach upon him. But of what way the styles change in the world, you always know what God's standard is. And he had to share that. That is to say, he knew the Nazarite on a distance. And he had to take no wine, that is, inwardly. He had to abstain from wine, and outwardly he had to wear the evidence of his devotion to his God and of his separation from all others that were about him. He stood out to say. Now, without being spiritualizing the passage at all, I wonder, do we wear the marks of separation as we move through the world? If I slipped into the business house where you work, would I know that you were a Christian before I would ask you? Would your demeanor indicate that you were born again? Occasionally I would sit at the seaside and I would watch the people go past, and I would say, well, now that girl's not saved. She's not born again. That man there, well, that man's not saved, no. He's pipe in his mouth, maybe, or cigarette in his hand, but he's not saved. And you just notice one after another sometimes. I would be simple enough as to say, well, now, that could be a Christian. That could be a Christian. Met somebody with a tennis racket, you know, you never suspect them. I always think of the man in County Antrim. I knew him well, the old man. And in the meeting where he was, they didn't seem to have the conscience about smoking that they should have had. That was because one of the older men thought it was all right, and it didn't help the young. I only sat in crossing. But he said he was working up in a hay shed. And two men drove into the yard of the farm where he was employed. And he says to his fellow workmen that were putting the hay in the shed, do you know, those could be two preachers looking at a piece of ground for a tent. And they all, do you know, they just look like it. And the boys watched them at the boss's door. And he says, well, watched them for a while and went on with her work, but kept her eye on them at the same time. And then he says, one of them put his hand in his pocket, and he pulled out a pipe, or pulled out a cigarette. Oh, says he, those are not preachers. Those are not preachers. Those are not preachers. He said, whoever else they are, they're not preachers anymore. And says he, from that day to this, I never smoked again. Because if I could judge the other man, it became a voice to myself. I learned the lesson from what I would think of others. And mark you, dear soul, there are certain features of the world life. And you as well as I know right well when you see them, you never think that that would be a professing Christian. And if that be your judgment of others, watch the others are not looking at you. I'm noting the things that you do, and the things you say, and the places you go. And they would put a big question mark at you. Even they didn't know your name, they would soon conclude there was something wrong. That's not like a Christian. Now, Samson, if we would only look at the good sides of his character, we would have a great mate. But you know, God's very honest when he's giving us a record of a man's life and doings. And he tells us the failures as well as the successes. And he seemed to have one major weakness. Now remember that. And I think it was somebody put it one time. Concerning another man, he had a strong weakness, as you could allow that expression. That was this. He had a weakness toward the opposite sex. And at least three things, that was his ruination. There's a close link between Samson and the Corinthian believers. You know the Corinthian believers were famed for their gift. They were noted for their ability. Samson was famed for his power and famed for his gift. And his spiritual endowment was way beyond the average. But you know that the Corinthians failed in the New Testament in very much the same lines as Samson failed in the Old. In spite of their gift, the evil of immorality came into their midst, and they had it to judge with shame in their face. In spite of their gift, there was a great lack of wisdom. For a man could be a gifted man and yet not a wise man. Many have great abilities, but they're associated with a lack of wisdom. But here's a man who has great ability, and it's not linked with wisdom, we're sorry to say. And seemingly very young, possibly in his late teens or around the 20 mark. But I don't think that Samson lived to an old man. I judge he died when he was about 40. I'm not going to argue that, but I think that. He judged this 20 years. And I take it that the 20 years began when he was approximately 20. And when he was just around the 20 mark, he went down to see the Philistines. And he saw a daughter of the Philistines, and she pleased him well. Pleased him well. You know, people are very easily fooled. Just to think that the man full of the Holy Spirit, that the man that the Spirit of the Lord has come upon, would be satisfied in his own life to choose his partner according to his eye. That would think more of a woman's looks than a woman's principles. That would be so easily deceived that her mere appearance would be all that he would find attractive to his mind and heart. And I'm not so very old, as I told you last night, but I think you will agree that many men are simply jaded by the sight of the eye. And someone wisely said, a good bit older than myself, not a woman's principles will outlive her looks. And her virtues will go far beyond her place. Men need to remember that. I could bring you to many young men, and I'm not unreasonable, I'm not critical. I can bear with men making mistakes. I can bear with quite a lot. I don't spend my time hammering the Lord's dear people, but I could bring you to young men. And they might have been giants for God by now, but their weakness lay in that very direction. And because of that, they simply have never been the men that God intended them to be. Now he was linking up with the Philistine. Actually, in his own mind, had the plan devised that he would make a bosom companion out of one of those Egyptian men and one of those Egyptian women that were living in the land of Palestine. In the Christ land. No wonder his mother and father said to him, "Is there none of the children of Israel that would do you? Could you not find any amongst your own people that you're going to the uncircumcised Philistines?" And it didn't work. For the Philistines, you're spirits of a Philistine. And before the story ends, he was sick out of his wife and didn't receive her at all. For her father didn't give her to him at the very end of the story. But instead of giving her to him, he gave her to the best man, as we would call in modern language. He gave her to his companion. And Samson missed the woman that he was after. Now, of course, I know. You see, this is the wonder of the story. I know that God overruled it. I think I hear some of you men standing up in the hall and saying, "But didn't he take an occasion against the Philistines? And didn't God allow him to slay the Philistines on account of that? And didn't he burn the Philistines' corn with tying the tails of the foxes together and all that?" Now you can go all over that again. And I listen to what you have to say. Always remember that because God overrules our blunders for his own glory, it's no thanks to us. And we're not saying that God hasn't again and again overruled our blunders. We're not saying that God hasn't at times gone beyond what we would have expected. We're not saying at times that God has outdone the enemy with his schemes and his masterstrokes. But even in all that is said, I don't believe for a moment but that Samson was a weaker man when this was done than he was before it happened. It left a mark against him that was retained until the day he died. Now you will notice that he is a remarkable man of strength. The Philistines come to fight with him because they are offended at his action. And he finds the jawbone of an ass. That is the angle bone of the ass. Just a new one. Hadn't been decayed or become in any way weak by age. And he lifts it. Likely the teeth still in it. And with that he slays it out. Talk about a button. You talk about a man able to use what's at his hand. Here's a man with a jawbone of an ass. He says, "Heaps of them, heaps of them, heaps of them, heaps of them." He slaughters all around him until 1,000 are slain. You see, he is ever fighting against the Philistines. And as we remarked last night, and we want to repeat it very emphatically tonight, in all his battles, and in all his fights, he's alone. Now you know that Gideon blew a trumpet, and there were a number gathered after him. Jephthah goes out to fight his battle, and the tribe, his own tribe and others, helped him. Barak went out to his fight, and they came from every quarter almost, to help him in the struggle. But here's a man. He's living at almost the end of the judges period. He's maybe living during the days of Eli, for aught I know. And he's coming right up to the very end of that crisis, to the very point of that crisis when a king will be anointed over Israel. And he has to fight alone. He's a strange man in that sense. There's nobody with him. I think it is a feature of the close of the different dispensations that very often men full of the Holy Spirit have a good deal of loneliness to bear. They're misunderstood by quite a number. You remember the way those letters close up in the third chapter of Revelation, which seems to give us a panorama view of the present period. And you remember that if any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come into him and sup with him. Now that opening the door, of course, not opening the assembly door to let the Lord in, for the Lord was in the midst of the churches. But it's opening his own heart's door to fellowship with the Lord. And you can see that there's something about the close of periods that men are more or less singular. The times become so difficult that it's difficult to gather others around to help in these struggles. When that story is told, the narrative almost closes, you would say, the history of Samson. And it says he judged Israel 20 years. And before that statement is made, you will notice that the man himself is brought very low. Just immediately after his victory, he's almost slain with thirst. He's about to perish. You know, it must have been a very arduous task to kill 1,000 men with an instrument like this, and then to discover when he had the slaughter finished and the enemy routed that he was all but gone himself. Now, of course, you know that well, that that is a very common principle in the Bible, that no sooner is victory achieved, but a severe trial comes our way. And that's a principle. And if it weren't for experiences like this in the life of Samson, we nearly wonder, was he in touch with God at all? But he prayed. And he owns his weakness. And he confesses that he's about to perish. And he does another thing. He acknowledges that the victory that he claimed for himself at the first is now pointed out and declared to him, declared by him, to be a victory by the Lord. It's the Lord that has given the Philistines into his hand. And what does God do? God opens up the hollow ground where he had been praying, and a well is formed so that we can have water to drink. Nice to see that God is giving his servant kind attention when no one else would refresh him. Mind you, dear brother, you could be brought, and so could I, to times when only the Lord can intervene. Now, I know I'll be advancing beyond the experience of quite a number. Well, you know, we all like to be propped up by our brethren. We like to be surrounded by friends. And we love to be comforted by those that are dear to us and near to us. But here's a man who has been brought into circumstances where only the Lord can intervene. And only the Lord would intervene. And he's made to value the Lord's sustaining mercy in a very critical period. Now, immediately your mind's jumping, I suppose, to the man Elijah under the juniper tree. Aren't you thinking of him? And you remember he was faint and weary after his great victory. And you remember he nearly wished that he would die. And you recall how the Lord had baked the bread beside him and gave him that fresh bread. And it says he went on the strength of it 40 days, showing us that tender touch, that whoever else may fail us in the struggles, and however unworthy we may feel in, we are in our struggles, God can come near at the critical moment and be to us all that we require on that occasion. Then comes the blacker chapter, the closing chapter of the man's life. We see him going to a harlot, falling into sin. Then we find him turning away from that and going to another place and finding Delilah. Possibly another Philistine, for aught I know. It's not very distinctly stated, but it looks like it. And he finds himself charmed with this woman. What happens? She is seeking to draw it from him, the secret of his power. She wants him to disclose it. Now you know that one of the great weaknesses of Samson lay in this, that he sailed a long time near the wind, as we would say. He went as close to the edge as he could go, until he went that far, he went right over. For he opened up his heart and told her the very secret. You recall that he was able to carry, this was earlier, he was able to carry the gates, pillars and all, right up the hill outside the city of Gaza. Then they put his hair into the loom, and they wove him up and so on, and he was able to carry loom and all away. Tied him up with this and tied him up with that, and he smashed everything, and was able to fall upon the Philistines, able to triumph every time. But there's a very solemn side in this story that I don't think is often mentioned, and that is this. The lever the Delilah used to draw the secret out of Samson's heart was the plea, "Now, Samson, you don't love me." She complained of the absence of love in Samson's heart. Now, you take a note of this. You nearly need to write it down because you could overlook it. And what is the biggest complaint that you hear from worldly-minded Christians? Oh, you know, there's no love. There's no love. If they really loved us, you know, we would get on well together. If they really loved us, there wouldn't be a bit of trouble. Always complaining about the lack of love. Now, I want you to do some thinking. Do you really think she loves Samson? When you saw his eyes been bored out, do you really think she loved him? When she saw him stripped of his strength and made helpless before the Philistines, did you love him? You watch the man or woman who's worldly minded, who wants worldly things in the assembly, who's always pushing that worldly imitation side of things as far as he can, and he's always complaining about the lack of love. That's his one big lament from you meet him till he parts off. You know there's no love. If there was only some love among them, you could get on all right. And he keeps harping on that from all to do. He's just another Delilah. Making it out. That Samson is withholding from her what she feels she has the right to know. He held it as long as he could. And daily he listened to the one story. You know, she believed in what the politicians believe in our land and in nearly all countries. If you harp long enough on anything, you'll get the people to believe it. And if you harp long enough in an assembly on any point, you'd nearly get some people to think you were right. And you keep on harping until people say, well, there must be something in it when it's mentioned so often. And she kept on harping until at length, the silly fool, if I dare so speak of this man, he says, you know where the secret lies? There was never a razor in my head, and if my head is shaven, I'll be as weak as other men. She says, no habit. What is that? I'll sweep away from him the marks of separation, and when I get rid of that, he says, how this is the rest. Now, look, she said, I don't want to be unkind now. I wouldn't like to leave you with a sour taste in your mouth. When these meetings are over, I don't want you to be going away grieved and sour and bitter. I want to tell you this, there are men alive tonight, and they would love to remove every trace of separation from God's assemblies. They would shave it off in the morning if they could do it. What would they do? They would rob us of our strength. Now you just take a wee look around, you friend. Now you're not unintelligent. You're not by any means sleeping. I know you're not. And you can see if you're wise at all that the way it's done is simply. Now they don't necessarily go in with the religious word, but you watch them carefully. Everything practically that's to be found in the religious world is substituted and brought into the assembly. Now you know that. You don't need to go 1,000 miles to see what I'm driving at. What is this? It's just that tendency. And the pressure's kept up. And kept up. And kept up. What for? We'll have to get like the world around us. If the world entertains the people, we'll do the same. If the world puts up a big show and a big choir and a big song and a big lump of show, well, we must do the same. If the world's idea is that a crowd gathers a crowd, well, we do the same. If the world feels that the people will listen to lovely singing, well, we'll get lovely singing. If they listen to music, we'll install the best instrument we can buy. If they listen to anything of an entertaining character, well, you know, you could entertain a man with intellectual addresses. And you'd never do a show any good. A whole lot of people think that, you know, all entertainment's just a matter of telling yarns or jokes or something like that. Look, see, there's a something in human nature that can even enjoy, apart from the Holy Spirit altogether, an argument, a debate, anything like that, appeals to the flesh. And you could be catering for the flesh. And not even a smile on your face. And you would be fooled in not knowing that you're just catering for the flesh. Shaving the head. Shaving the head. Removing everything of that separation unto God. Now I would assume, I'm not dogmatic, but I would assume that most here are not only saved, but got cleansed. And in the goodness of the Lord, maybe some of you with more exercise than the speaker, you have been allowed to take your place in a simple assembly of the Lord's favor. Your fingers have often been put to the loaf, and your lips have often been touching the cup, telling of his precious blood. Now, don't you admit that? Take a look at a scripture assembly. Isn't it a very simple gathering? Just a little company of simple believers. Nobody making any big claims. Nobody shouting about their importance. Each feeling, I'm only a sinner. I'm nothing at all. And Jesus Christ is my all in all. I wonder, are we satisfied with that? All right. Are we to be a hankering? Now be honest. Now I'm not saying there's just the foolish in you. Because I have been wise enough to notice, don't claim to be wise, but I've been wise enough to notice, that when people start to depart, they never intended to go as far as the dead. Never. Oh, once they start to slip, they always felt, well, now others may go as far as the dead, but I'll only go this far. But the trouble was getting the brakes to work. The slope was so steep that before they knew where they had slipped too far, and they couldn't find the brakes. Samson played with his hair, getting it put into the web. He played with the wine because he went near the vineyards. And he pled with touching the dead body, for he took the honey out of the carcass of the lion. Now, I'm not saying he was wrong on all those points, but he was coming close on it. But now he's got the honey! And the hair off his head. He begins to shake himself, as at other times. And solemnly added in the story, it would make your heart sore to read. He wist not that the Lord had departed from him. And what does that mean? It means that his devotion to this worldly woman, which demonstrates a man's affection going after worldly principles, has robbed him of the power of God in his soul. We may talk as we like. Man's intellect doesn't leave him, you know, when he begins to get worldly minded. He's still as clever as ever. His ability to speak likely wouldn't be much affected by it. He may be able to speak as fluently as ever. His knowledge of the Bible won't leave him. Oh no, he'll be able to run you through the prophets as freely as ever. There was something missing. The power of the God. If there's a man on earth to be pitied, it's a man who stood for the truth of God in early life and has so slipped into worldly ideas and has become so associated with worldly principles that the power that once he had has disappeared. I think that's so. What happened? The Philistines were told about it. They rush in upon him. They take hold of him. They go out of his eyes. One of those cruel things. Mind you, the Philistines were cruel. They put him in brazen fetters. Both feet were tied in brazen fetters. And they give him the grinding stone. And he had sipped and grind the meal. doing a slave job. What nice did they do? They have a big party. A big night, or a big day, to celebrate their victory over Samson. Well, master, he never hurt us again. He never slay another Philistine. So they think, we have a great celebration through our God. We make the great show now. We gather the poor lords of the Philistines and those hundreds of spectators up onto the roof of the courtyard where it was held. And then to make sure that there'd be no mistake in the idea of the celebration, we better get the victim alone and make sport for us. They brought Samson into the middle of the courtyard, where the spectators could see from the roof, and where the men sitting round in the building, or in the gallery as we would call it in modern terms, could witness this fool in the midst, making sport for the Philistines. And he's playing the games for them, or whatever they made him do. There comes a lull in his entertainment, and he leans against. He's standing beside a ladder, and advised on to think that the man could slay a thousand with the jawbone of an ass. A lad's always needed now to hold him. Just a lad, you know. That's always needed to hold him now. And he says, now, just let me feel these fellers. And he gets a hold of him, and he bows himself. The hair has begun to grow again. And down comes the whole structure, and slays the 3,000 that were there. And Samson dies in the middle of it. You know, I think there are a number of men on earth, I'm not saying many of them in the hall, I'd forget that their hair started to grow again. Now, I'm speaking figuratively. What would that be? Just get back to where they were when they were young men. Just get back to where they were when they first took their seats at the Lord's table. Just get back to the place of reproach that once they appreciated. Just get back to that path of separation that once they taught. Just get to the spot where they could thankfully say, it's just like what it used to be. That's what we used to hear ministered, and that's what I enjoy still. Do you know this? The strife might return again. The strife might return again. Why? Because as soon as Samson's hair began to grow again, his strength was back. Strength was back. Pity ever that'd be shaven off? It's a pity he ever let Delilah sit on, or that he ever sat or leaned on Delilah's lap. Pity that he ever took any heed to her tears or to her pleadings. He misunderstood her profession of love. He misunderstood her demand for his love, because she did not love him, or she would never have taken the silver from the Philistines when she found his secret out. And the terror well for it, because it was to their great glory that Samson had lost his hair. Now, the words, in a big way, you know that. Maybe, in the mercy of the Lord, some of you don't know much about it. I hope you don't. But you know that there's a big move in the religious world to remove every barrier between what they call Christian people. And their idea of a Christian, remember, and our idea of a Christian are as far apart as the pole. Now get that into your mind. What they believe as a Christian is a man reared in a Christian country. What we believe as a Christian is a man born again. And it would maybe surprise some of you to know that there are men professedly in assemblies, meeting in conference, together, to see how far they can go with the ecumenical movement as far as assemblies were concerned. See what help they can be to the religious activity that's going on at the present day. Now, I'm not exaggerating when I say that. I have read it in print, the lectures they gave, showing that if there's any religious movement in the cities, we ought to be at it. If there are any counselors to be provided, the assembly should provide them. If there is any help that we can afford to these campaigns, be they evangelistical or whatever form they may take, that we should be in the front rank as God's assembly. Now, I have read this in black and white. I could give you the names of some of the lecturers, well-known names, professedly amongst the assemblies of the Lord's people. Now, would that not be shaving off the hair, brethren? Would that not mean that the very things that we have dreaded and the very things that we have feared? You know this, if I believe that the religious communities around me, now I'm not here to slander them, if I believed they were right, I would never sit another Lord's Day and drink God's assembly. And I would think I was grieving the Lord if I did. And you say, why then? Why then do you understand? Because we believe it's the place the Lord would have. If you don't believe that, brother, you would need to go home and pray a little tonight and don't sleep until you're sure. And if it be God's place, and if it be God's assembly, know what you should do, brother. And you know what you should do, sister. You do all you can to encourage what is of God that's in it. Put your weight into it. Don't be lying back over some wee huffy matter or some wee petty thing that's maybe annoying you. Don't be withholding your strength from that which is of God. Don't be trying to boycott the assembly in any way. Put your heart into it. If there's a prayer meeting, do your best to be at it and pray if you can. If there's a Bible reading, contribute to it to the help of the company. When you come on the first day of the week, see that you mingle your praises as best you can with the company and enjoy the Lord and His love and His death upon the tree. And if there be gospel meetings or ministry meetings or whatever efforts being made, it may not be everything that you would want and it may not be of your origin that it was arranged or something like that. But for the Lord's sake, seek your pride and your importance for once. Realize it's only on earth you'll have to bear the brooch for Christ and see to it that you walk in separation and enjoy your privilege in separation. And that you encourage others in the ways of separation, not only from evil, but to the Lord. For that's the great idea in the Nazarite, that it's to the Lord. Then you will find that when your day is done, you have cause to thank God that at least you kept your hair on until the journey was over. And then speaking figuratively, you were preserved in a position and in a condition where the Lord could bless you and cheer your heart. In divine thanks, shall we pray?